We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Donald Trump implores the Federal Reserve once again not to raise interest rates at its December meeting this week. Well, what will Chairman Jay Powell do? Plus, the White House backs off its shutdown threat over border security funding as Congress, the 115th Congress, reaches its final days this week. So if no shutdown, what will Congress pass in the final days? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and here with Bill McGurn. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Kim. Welcome. So let's talk about the Fed first because it's important. The economy is significant, and there are a lot of people, a lot of market signals. I'm one of them looking at market signals who think the Fed should probably pause this week and not follow through with its plans. Probably be only a quarter point cut, but nonetheless, you can see a lot of financial signals there in the markets and in the economy that should, I think, cause some concern at the Federal Reserve, not least prices that have been falling in commodities, oil, farm goods, other signals that are often tell us about inflation coming. The economy is slowing around the world, no question. The U.S. economy is still strong, but some signs that it is no longer growing at 4%, closer to 3%. Not a sign of recession yet, but maybe a sign and reason for caution, Kim.
Well, what you just said, Paul, matters in that you're talking about all of these traditional indicators that the Fed looks at when they decide whether or not to raise rates. But we're not necessarily in a normal environment right now. We are coming off the end of this grand monetary experiment in quantitative easing. And now we're in this period of quantitative tightening. And I think that that means that we can't necessarily look at all of those indicators the way the Fed has in the past and just proceed as usual. It takes a little bit of humility on the Fed's part to say maybe we're in uncharted territory here. You add that to the fact that some of those indicators, you know, are showing mixed signals. You just mentioned the growth thing. Yes, the United States economy looks pretty good, but there are warning signs elsewhere. And it does seem like a good enough reason for the Fed to move slowly here, at least just not this month, and take a new look next year and see where things stand.
Well, but as always in the age of Trump, Bill, Donald Trump belly flops into the debate, and he has he keeps pounding the Fed and Chairman Jay Powell, saying he's even said he regrets nominating Jay Powell as chairman of the Fed because he's raised rates too much. And the reaction to that within an independent central bank would normally be, well, I'm not going to do something that he tells me to do because it'll look like I'm not independent. So when I think in that sense, Trump may be actually counterproductive in terms of this rate increase, because I think Jay Powell is probably going to raise rates in part because he's been telling the markets he would, and he likes to follow through with that. And number two, he will not want to be seen to be taking dictation from Donald Trump. Now, I believe you can make a perfectly defensible decision not to raise rates. It has nothing to do with Trump. But of course, for Jay Powell, that may be a different perception that he worries about.
Yeah, I think our editorial laid that out pretty well. Look, the irony is I'm sympathetic to Donald Trump's position in this particular moment, but I'm also sympathetic to the Fed chairman's overall strategy of moving the Fed back into a more normal place, right? It's just we're not even advocating that it's certainly not that they go back to what they were doing before, but just to go slowly because we've hit a few bumps in the road and there are none of the alarming signs of inflation and so forth. But as you say, look, it's also human nature, but the Fed chairman's supposed to be independent. If he declines to raise rates after having made the case for it for several months, then he's going to be accused of being a lackey of Trump. And Trump may think he's a lackey, you know, for doing. As you say, there's a perfectly legitimate case to be made for doing what the president suggests, for just hanging back a little bit and let's see where these things go. But that becomes harder politically. But I think the editorial said it well. Look, in these cases, when you have this kind of job, you've got to do the right thing. If you do the right thing for the economy, the politics will sort itself out. If you do the wrong thing and you get the economy wrong, the politics are going to be a nightmare.
Kim, you mentioned quantitative tightening. I can hear people snoozing all over the country at that, including
you're
me.
The one that wanted to talk about the Fed.
including me. Of course, it's the opposite of it's basically selling off its bond portfolio to stop controlling the long end of the bond market, to let market signals more set rates. I think it's the right thing to do, but we've never done this before. This kind of thing hasn't happened, and the combination of higher interest rates plus quantitative tightening is a combination we aren't sure what the impact will be. And that's, I think, a very strong argument, particularly after the Fed now has gone all the way up to 275, I think it is, and the short rates, to maybe look at it and say, okay, where are we? What's the impact on credit markets? What's the impact on prices? And what's the impact on growth? And then reconsider in a couple of months. It's not as if they pause in December that they have to pause for all time. They meet just about every month.
Well, right. And again, none of those indicators I was mentioning before are necessarily should be setting off alarm bells for the Fed at the moment. What's the Fed's mandate? To control prices with low unemployment. There's no real signs of inflation out there. One of the Fed's favorite measures of inflation, something just to cause people to snooze again, the PCE deflator has been going down for months. And you look at some of major currencies out there and commodities that are often if they're rising in price, it's a suggestion of inflation. They're down. This is in contrast to past periods when the Fed didn't move quick enough, even when commodity prices were really booming. Another thing that the Fed tends to look at is wages. They have been going up, but we've had a pretty healthy labor market, and we've still got some pretty good productivity, which suggests further room, for non-inflationary wage gains. So these are the things the Fed normally looks at. Look, I think we have a better shot in a Jerome Powell and maybe ignoring the president than past Fed directors. You know, you look back at the days of Greenspan and Bernanke, and the Fed, it really presented itself as completely infallible, and what it said was, it never suggested it could get anything wrong. Jerome Powell's been a little bit more humble in this, and so perhaps he is the sort of person that might be willing to say, okay, we're going to pause, and by the way, Mr. President, I didn't pause because of you. We paused because it was the right thing to do.
All right, Kim, thank you. We're talking about the Federal Reserve and Donald Trump, plus the White House shutdown threat seems to be going away. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And let's talk about the shutdown threat that seems to have gone away. The president famously meeting with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi last week saying, I'll shut it down. I'll do it proudly over border security funding, which, of course, Chuck Schumer, the cat that ate the canary, smiling broadly and saying, OK, Mr. President, you go ahead right ahead and take responsibility for that and take the blame. Shutting down the government over Christmas. We'll be happy to blame that on you and Republicans. He seems to now have backed off from that, due in part to, I think, the lobbying by Republicans on Capitol Hill, saying it's not going to do you any good, not going to do your policy any good. We don't know where this ends up this week, Bill. It may end up with a continuing resolution, not an actual budget passage, that just kicks this issue into the next year. Or they might get a larger budget done for the remainder of fiscal 19, which runs through the end of next September. And no shutdown. And, of course, we'll have another fight over all of this next year.
Yeah, I sort of my money's on a continuing resolution, only because my understanding is some of the members, Republican members who lost, have left town already. The time is just running out. We're going to know, you know, in days what they decide.
And they need new jobs, Bill.
And Washington is a master at the temporary kind of stopgaps for not resolving problems. I was surprised to see President Trump so forceful in saying he would accept a shutdown, because normally the game is to try to put the blame on the other guy for it, right? The last time this happened in January, it was the Schumer shutdown. Remember, he shut it down over DACA on Thursday, and by Monday was crying uncle. So it's an odd kind of politics.
Well, I think that the administration, a good part of the administration, Kim, would like to maybe, as long as the Republicans are still controlling the House, it's a hard debate to make because they're still responsible for the House. But once Nancy Pelosi takes over, then I think you can have a cleaner Republican versus Democrat, Trump versus Democrats on Capitol Hill debate. And that may be what the White House is angling for.
Yeah, it maybe is what the White House is angling for, but I think there are two things pushing against that. One is, as you just mentioned, I think there's been some pressure on Trump not to be the one to take the blame for this. Then people pointing out to him that there could be some real consequences politically in doing that. Two, Republicans in the House and in the Senate, they just want to go home, and they want it to be done as well. You know, I mean, one thing I'll give them credit for, they did do a better job this year at passing spending bills generally on time, so that about 75% of the government is actually funded. We're talking about the rest of it here.
So the shutdown, what that means is that if you include so-called essential parts of the government, some like Department of Homeland Security and others, it means that the shutdown actually will be relatively small.
Correct, especially because if you look at departments that are in this bucket that have not been funded yet, these are things like the State Department, Homeland Security. As you said, most of those folks are deemed essential, and so they do continue working. But the Republicans, I think that there's a desire to get this done just to see it through, get the rest of it passed, that they also think, too, that they're going to have more control, better control over the contours of a spending bill. Obviously, if they're still in control in the House versus next year when Nancy Pelosi takes over. So I think there's still a good possibility of an actual spending bill coming out, especially because just this morning, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders suggested that the White House might have found an alternative way to get this $5 billion at once for its wall. It's kind of fuzzy yet what she means by that, but it seemed to suggest that they would pass a bill that had a lot of money for border security, only $1.6 billion for the wall, but that would take money from other areas to put it to make that $5 billion. I'm not quite sure, but it sounds as though the White House is now in a mood to try to compromise with Democrats.
Well, it sounds like I don't think it's going to be Mexico that's paying for the wall, is it? I think that's a campaign idea that has died a mourning. Were they going to do crowdfund? How are they going to pay for it?
I think they're thinking of swiping this from some other budget. I'm not quite sure. Again, it's very unclear, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, my regret here as this Congress ends on immigration is that Donald Trump, I think, was uniquely positioned to strike a deal with Democrats because of his credibility with the immigration restrictionists from his campaign. And he was uniquely positioned to make a deal with Democrats to be able to legalize the Dreamers, the DACA young adults who were brought here illegally as children in return for more border restriction policies that would satisfy most of his base. And he walked away from that bill this year earlier, and that compromise earlier bill. And I think it's now I think it's much less likely that he gets it in the next 2 years, which makes it much more likely that there is the continuing poisonous extremism of both sides of the immigration debate continues. And, you know, just as a general thought, I mean, one of the definitions, I think, of political leadership is to take your voters, your supporters, and sometimes lead them to where they don't feel entirely comfortable, and to show them that it's actually good to get there for the sake of your views and the good of the country. And I think he missed this chance on immigration.
Yeah. In fairness, I think that the Democrats played some part of that. And Mrs. Pelosi makes clear she doesn't want to do any deal. But I think, look, you're fundamentally right on two points. One is, despite the apparent polarization, he wants to border the wall and they want DACA. This is perfect politics. It's a reasonable trade-off. I do think that the problem on each side is that there are elements on each side that believe the issue plays politically better to them. I think the Democrats believe that when Barack Obama helped blow up the comprehensive deal that other Democrats like Ted Kennedy were working on with Bush.
In 2007.
But I think that that may have changed now with the caravan, may have changed it. So I think some of the Republicans in the Trump White House may be digging in their heels, feeling that it works better politically. But of course, the problem with this is that the system doesn't work at all. And the status quo is terrible. I would go further. I'd say, look, if they're going to do it, and I still think it's in the interest of both parties to actually get something done in immigration. That hasn't been done for 30 or 40 years. To get anything done, I think it's in the interest of both parties, but I think it can only happen in this coming year if it's going to happen. It's not going to happen in the election year, I think. They're not going to give Donald Trump a victory, and he's not going to, you know, they're not going to be in the mood to be compromising. And in fact, look at all those candidates in the Senate for the Democratic nomination. They're not going to want a cooperation. Well, I think Mrs. Pelosi could make a deal if she's if she showed some leadership and Trump went back to his original terms, DACA for the walls. It's a good deal.
It's possible. I think the odds are probably slim. But if I were a Republican and Kim looked at this last election in November, the president made the caravan his defining issue at the end of the campaign. There's not much evidence that I can find that it helped Republicans. I mean, I think it actually hurt them in some of the swing suburban districts where they got crushed, losing, I think, a net 40 seats, is it? So I think that if you're a Republican saying, well, I can exploit this in 2020, I'm not so sure. After Donald Trump would have been in office for 4 years, you're saying I couldn't get anything done either? Not sure that's a winning message.
Absolutely. And there's no question that they were hurt by that suburban vote, which undoubtedly came back in part to the immigration question. I think the issue is, does Donald Trump care? You know, he's clearly been told this by many smart people, but I think the best insight I was ever given into Donald Trump, somebody that worked on his campaign, and I said, why does he do this stuff that just doesn't seem to generally help him politically? And he said, you know, Donald Trump's way of looking at the world is, if it worked for me once, it will continue working for me. And, you know, in his view, that's what he campaigned on out there in 2016, and it got him elected. And it seems not to matter to him that, you know, the general views in the country shift, they change, more people are tuned in, they may have soured on him for other reasons, and that he's got to continue producing and producing in new ways that might require him to go in areas that are not his core stump speech.
Well, and it is one thing to run as a challenger against the incumbent party. Hillary Clinton was not the incumbent president, but she was with the incumbent party, and to say you haven't solved the immigration problem, I can, versus saying, well, I've had 4 years and I didn't do anything either.
Well, it's just especially a tougher the case first to 2 years, I had majorities in Congress, right? I mean, that's the problem that they have. And that's why I think, look, the immigration system is supposed to be set by Congress. And the failure to make trade-offs that they make in many other points of legislation is embittering the country. And it's just perverse to think it's working politically for your side when it's just it's not working for the American people what we have now. There's no clear rules. I have three adopted children. I went through a minor part of this, and it's just chaotic and arbitrary and unfair. It's very hard to figure out. So people with far fewer resources have a much worse time. And look, wasn't Donald Trump had imported some workers, you know, for Mar-a-Lago before? There are just all these contradictions, and Congress is the proper place to start. I think we can no longer go back to the comprehensive reform. That's not going to work. But they need to make some step on this.
You can make some piecemeal reforms. I think that's the way to proceed. All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow in this week before Christmas with another edition of Potomac Watch.